From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The Central American country of Nicaragua has one of the lowest infection rates for the coronavirus of any country in the world. Today we discuss that with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, who lives and works in Nicaragua, outside of the capital, Managua. Welcome back. I guess we can pick up by talking about President Daniel Ortega's speech presentation about the coronavirus and the effort that's going on in Nicaragua, where you are, and it's quite a different treatment of it than it is in places like New York, where I am, and yet so far it seems to be perfectly matched to the situation in Nicaragua.
Every country will have their own response to the pandemic, and I don't think we should underplay or downplay the seriousness of the pandemic. It's a very serious virus. Personally, I feel very strongly that there's a very vicious, pernicious double standard being applied, because loss of life is loss of life, and it doesn't matter whether it's 10,000 or 20,000, which is the figure in the United States, I understand, for this COVID-19 virus pandemic.
Right.
And if you compare that with other outbreaks of different kinds of viral infections, like the 2017-2018 influenza, and between 60 and 80,000 people died there. The flu may not be as vicious and aggressive a virus as the current virus. We're still lacking data. But I mean, the thing is that any number of deaths at that level is to be condemned. And if there's that level of fatalities, you'd think, well, the authorities are going to take measures to deal with it. Now, in the United States, they had that influenza epidemic 2017-2018, which only lasted, it was only over 3, maybe 4 months maximum, but they lost that huge number of people in that short period of time, and they seem to have learned nothing when they had at least a month, almost 2 months, to get ready for, as a result of the experience in China. And they completely failed to do so.
Right.
And now health workers are paying the price for that. And the general population's paying the price for that. And they're not just paying the price in specifically in health terms. They're also paying the price in very much so in economic terms. You know, and so that what's happened in the United States is something that should be a lesson for everybody around the world. And Nicaragua, the experience of Nicaragua, not just Nicaragua, if you look at the experience of Vietnam, for example, another impoverished developing country, or if you look at the experience of the province of Kerala in India, which has 35 million people, and their response. And all the responses in these countries have been different. If you look at the response in Venezuela, it's been different again there. But what is common to all those four places that I just mentioned, Nicaragua, Kerala in India, Vietnam, Venezuela, and I'm sure other places as well, is that they have prioritized their public health system. They've defended and consolidated and reinforced their public health system in Nicaragua ever since Daniel Ortega and the Sandinista Front returned to government in January 2007. Over the last 13 years, they've built something like 15 hospitals. No, and I think actually the figure's closer to 18. 18 hospitals and health centers across the country, with another 15 or so under construction. And they've increased the number of health staff, they've improved health facilities, they've invested a lot in the brand new equipment, they've negotiated programs with the Russian Federation to produce vaccines. They produce millions of vaccines every year now, for just both for the country and for the region.
Right.
and they now have a state-of-the-art laboratory that's the second most sophisticated in all of Latin America after its counterpart in Mexico. You know, and all that, you never hear, of course, about that investment. And you never hear about the grassroots preventive health model, community and family-based health model that has been developed in Nicaragua, just as it has in Venezuela, and I suspect very much so also in Vietnam and Kerala. One of the common things in all these countries is that they have mass mobilization at grassroots. So, for example, in Nicaragua's case, I think we mentioned this last week, health promoters and health workers have made over 2.5 million house visits to in a country with a population of 6.5 million. And what they've been doing is explaining preventive measures, monitoring people for symptoms, and so on. And the same thing has happened in Vietnam, in Kerala, and in Venezuela, where the community-based response to preventing the spread of the virus has been nothing short of a miracle. And it's just incredible that a country that has been subjected to 7 years now of severe US sanctions and severe sanctions from the European Union, a country that's had its wealth stolen by banks and financial institutions and governments in the European Union to the tune of billions of dollars.
Right.
It's still, Venezuela has in statistical terms at any rate, the best response, the best results in all of Latin America in terms, and I think they've had something like 189 deaths, something like that, out of a population of 28 million. And that perhaps we can check the figures while we're online, because it would be worth looking at that. But
which numbers? What did you want to check?
The number of deaths. I think it's 189.
Where? I'm sorry. What number of deaths?
In Venezuela.
Venezuela.
From the virus.
Yeah, we can do that. Absolutely. Let's see. And this is we're talking on. Today is the 16th of April, and let's see. We got for Venezuela the number of deaths so far. 100 and just wait a minute. Which column is which here? Oh, okay. Total deaths. Okay, here we go. Where was I lost it already? Let's do that again. Okay, the total deaths in Venezuela. 9. The total number of cases, 197.
Well, okay, sorry. So, please forgive me for getting that wrong.
Yeah.
But that, don't you think that's astonishing?
Yes.
And in Colombia,
of course.
And I think that the deaths in Colombia and Ecuador are well into their hundreds.
Yeah. Let's see. In Colombia, we've got, Colombia has 3,000, cases, 3,105, with 131 deaths. Now, where else did you say?
Ecuador. I think Ecuador over 300.
Actually, their numbers there are in question by their own government right now. They had 8,225 cases with 403 deaths, but there's a report in Telesur where they're speculating inside Ecuador that perhaps there's as many as 5,000 deaths. And
right.
Because they're worried about how do we parse, did this person have it or not, or did they die of, whatever, the different multiple causes and failure to test issues, wondering how reliable their data is. But a lot, using the same standard that everyone else is using, Ecuador has 8,200 cases, we just said what Colombia has. And Venezuela has 172, and Nicaragua they've had 6 so far?
No, they've had 9. We've had 9 cases
so far. Yeah.
In death.
9.
But all this data is questionable, right? But it gives you a good idea of, it gives you a pretty accurate idea of who's doing well and who's having a who's doing really badly.
Honduras has 426 with 35 deaths reported.
Now, if you look at that, Honduras and El Salvador are both countries that imposed lockdowns.
Right.
Which is absurd.
Right.
And people are starving. People are starving in Honduras and El Salvador as a result of those lockdowns.
Right.
And the news hasn't got out yet, but it will.
Right.
Nicaragua, what Nicaragua did was it started preparing very early. It started preparing at the end of January. Right. And what they did in Nicaragua and in Venezuela, and I need to refresh my memory about what the policies were in Kerala and India and in Vietnam, but they were all based on very early preparation,
right,
and very early insistence on the importance of prevention. Rather than waiting for the virus to spread. And so what they did was very, very early on, they started taking people's temperatures as they were coming through airports and frontier posts.
Right.
They didn't try and shut down the frontier, because if they'd shut down the frontier, and all they'd have done would have forced people to use clandestine crossings,
right,
along Nicaragua's very extensive borders with Honduras and Costa Rica.
Right.
And they deliberately kept their frontiers open. They deliberately maintained flights from overseas. And they just monitored everybody, right, passing through,
right,
their ports and their frontier crossings.
Right.
And anybody who had symptoms, they tested them for the virus. They don't use antibody tests. They test for the virus itself.
Right.
And so they've got this super duper laboratory, and they get the result back in 4 hours. Mm. So, wow. And they've been testing people, and if people test negative, and it's possible that they still have the virus, so what they've been doing is saying to people, look, it's possible that you may develop the virus. We want you to self-isolate, and somebody will call around to visit you,
right,
to see how you're getting on.
Right.
And that is what they did. It may sound incredible, but their contact tracing has been extremely rigorous.
I'm not surprised by that. I've seen, in Cuba, the neighborhood, the grapevine, whatever, like the neighborhood organizations, just the people's organizations, the little neighborhood the committees and such, they're very efficient. Everybody knows what's going on everywhere. It's not like the police state method that people, try to portray it as here in the United States. It's rather, like an old-style neighborhood where everybody, your mother knows where me and my friends are playing behind those old rusty cars around the corner. There's somebody that knows what's going on everywhere, and the people themselves aren't hiding because they know you're watching me, so if I fall down, you're going to help me.
Right. Yeah, and it's the difference between a society based on solidarity and a society based on greed and competition.
Exactly.
Now, you have that reality, and whatever the criticisms may be of the contradictions in the political economic contradictions in Vietnam and or Venezuela or anywhere, and in any of these places where they all have this fundamental ethos of solidarity, and so and that's what's made Nicaragua's response to the epidemic here, the COVID-19 pandemic, so successful. And that's what's been the basis of the success in Vietnam, in Kerala, and also in Venezuela with their incredible community organization.
Right.
And it's difficult to overpraise what they've done in Venezuela, given the outright economic and even military aggression, because there are constant provocations against Venezuela.
Oh yeah.
No, and these latest maneuvers in the Caribbean, by the US Navy and its allies, the constant provocations by Colombia's narco-terror president, Iván Duque, who's just a stooge for Álvaro Uribe and his narco-terror network, and the blatant attempts by Brazil's Bolsonaro to intimidate Venezuela. And all of that makes Venezuela's success in combating the virus even more extraordinary. Sorry, Don. So then, you know, you look at that and you think, and here in Nicaragua, and Daniel Ortega came on television after staying out of the limelight for quite a long time. The Vice President Rosario Murillo is on television every day. She has every weekday. Sorry, Don.
Right.
And every weekday, Rosario does a daily address to the nation, giving them an update on how things are going. She does that.
Right.
Anyway, she's been doing it for years to let people know what the government's doing. You know, and the opposition constantly say, oh, well, the government's hermetic and secretive and it won't tell you anything. But every day, Rosario Murillo is on radio and television telling people what the government's doing and what the programs are doing and what's happening all over the country.
Right.
You know, so then
right.
And, she is the public face of Nicaragua's government,
right.
More so than Danielle.
Right.
And what Danielle's role is much more strategic, and he's always working behind the scenes. Doing meetings, and he doesn't waste time on publicity. He's not interested in that.
Right.
Daniel Ortega doesn't like kind of appearing before the cameras and doing public events.
Right.
Unless there's a very specific reason. And so when he appeared last night, it was a big relief for everybody. In the Sandinista Front political party and anybody who sympathizes with the government, because over the last 30 days, the opposition have been saying, oh, well, looks like Daniel Ortega has died because we haven't seen him for 30 days.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they were coming out with. And they actually produced videos kind of alleging that Daniel Ortega had died.
The U.S. media is doing, you know, they were doing what they used to call Kremlin watching, you know. It's like, it's been 38 days since Brezhnev's been seen in public kind of stuff. The New York Times is doing it. The Washington Post was doing it, you know, up until a couple days ago.
Yeah, so now Daniel's a bit. He was in very good health and very, very, very impressive in his delivery. And quite the reverse of Joe Biden. I think Daniel Ortega is actually a little older than Joe Biden, but I'm 75 or 76 or something. But he's very, very articulate. They're not going to take his car keys away from him yet.
Yeah, like Jimmy Dore said, that he had said something, or either he or Aaron Maté said in the interview that he had done. Biden is looking for the keys to the government, to the keys to the kingdom, and they should take his car keys away.
Right. Yeah, I saw that too. So anyway, Daniel was very, very impressive in his speech, and basically he was saying that this is a very decisive moment, and it should be a moment for reflection and learning and understanding that the general policies governing the world economy are going the wrong way. It's like, you know those signs on when you go on highways and you go in the wrong way. There's a saying, turn back, wrong way.
Right.
And Daniel Ortega is saying that this virus is one of those signs.
Right.
What he's saying is, how dare they invest trillions of dollars in very advanced weapons of all kinds, especially nuclear weapons, when they can't even protect their population from a virus.
That's right.
And he also went on to point out that there's no point putting up walls to keep out migrants, because that is not going to protect you against a virus. What's going to protect you against a virus is economic justice for everybody in the world.
Right.
So that and health systems that meet people's needs at grassroots in a genuine way. And that's what's going to address the threat of a global pandemic from this kind of virus.
Right. You can't have like large groups or even small groups of people that are walking around sick when you're trying to contain an epidemic or a pandemic. It's impossible. It's exactly the opposite of what needs to be done. You have to have medical care for everyone or it doesn't work.
Yeah. And so, Danielle pointed out that Nicaragua's public health system is free, universal, and currently extremely well equipped to address the possible numbers that might be affected by the virus. But what his health. Sorry, Don. What his health advisors have said is that they accept that the virus has reached Nicaragua and there's no way that it can be kept out, but it can be controlled. And so far, there have been no cases of local transmission of the virus. The cases that have been identified have all been people returning from overseas, mainly from the United States, in fact. Who were identified, tested, and found to be infected, and that they of those 9 cases, one has died, 6 have recovered, 2 are still under care, but on the way to recovery. And of those 9 cases, 37 people associated with them have been identified, contacted, and isolated. And of those, I think there's still a number of like 10 or so who are still under observation. But, and that's what they're trying to do is to prevent a situation like the one that has arisen in New York, where the hospital system is just completely overloaded and can't cope with the number of patients and doesn't have the resources to cope with the number of patients. They're trying to avoid precisely that situation. And so far, they've had a tremendous success, right, because there's been no local transmission of the virus so far. No doubt there will be. But if that happens, the government is ready.
Yeah.
The government is ready with measures for local containment.
Right.
Depending on how the situation develops. So, that's in such stark contrast, as we were saying earlier, with what's been happening in Honduras and El Salvador. And you get people, and the coverage of Danielle's speech has been completely abysmal.
Right.
And you've got Amnesty International. You explained to me that Amnesty International are accusing him of flagrantly neglecting people's basic rights.
Yeah.
When in fact, Nicaragua is the only country in the region that has actually respected people's rights. You know, we've got to a situation in terms of false news and media coverage where you have to, with regards to countries like Nicaragua and Venezuela and other countries, Syria, for example, you just have to completely reverse. And what is actually happening is, you can guarantee that what is actually happening in these countries is exactly the opposite of what Amnesty International or the United Nations Human Rights Commission or the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons or the UN High Commission for Refugees or the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights. It's exactly the opposite of what all those institutions say.
Right.
You can guarantee it.
There's a report today, Amnesty International's website, dated today. It's a couple hours ago. Here's the caption on the headline. Nicaragua, government increases risk of COVID-19 infection in a country already devastated by 2 years of crisis. And the 2 years of crisis they refer to as the attempted coup that with the U.S. engineered in April of 2018. And other than the immediate fallout from that, the 2 years of crisis have been a return to normalcy. And you again mentioned the numbers in terms of the infection rate in Nicaragua is probably the lowest on the planet right now.
Yeah, with the possible exception of some countries in Africa.
You got nine cases in a country of 6.5 million people.
Right. Yes, and so and we're coming up to the second anniversary of the violent failed coup attempt of April 2018. And next week I've got to go down to Managua and interview some reporters and journalists on a radio station called Radio Nueva Radio. And they were people who survived an attack by opposition supporters, these peaceful protesters that Amnesty International has been so vocal in defending, who attacked Nuevo Radio Yar, tried to burn it down, fired gunshots and homemade mortars at the radio station, attacked firefighters and police officers trying to rescue people confined to the radio station under attack. And actually, the 22 people in that radio station did, in fact, manage to escape, but the radio station was completely burned down. And so, I'll be going to talk to those people next week. But you won't ever read about that.
Of course not.
Amnesty International has resolutely refused to even mention that kind of incident. It hasn't mentioned the murder of 22 police officers, except to say, oh, well, it was their fellow police officers that decided to turn on them and kill them. That's Amnesty International's explanation for why 22 police officers were killed and 400 suffered gunshot wounds.
Right.
That's their explanation.
Right. Right.
You know,
these are the same things that we've seen. When you had an attempted coup on several occasions in Venezuela, the attempted coup that was at the beginning of the war in Syria. You know, you have essentially these, and also we saw this at the Maidan in Ukraine. Suddenly, out of nowhere, there are snipers and shooters that take out police officers. And for some reason, no one notices that as a problem, that the response of the police arresting people for doing it is the problem, as opposed to here in the United States, where if you throw a cream pie at a police officer, you're desecrating our holy heroes, and you should be executed.
I think that's an earlier, very clear demonstration of the double standards that are applied, in the same way that they're applying this double standard to the COVID-19 outbreak, attacking Nicaragua without even mentioning that it has the lowest infection rate in Latin America.
Well, I think we're out of time now for this week. But what I think I'd like to do next week when we start is maybe we'll begin with the numbers that show the infection rates across the region as a function of both the nation state itself and also population, and have a conversation about it, and then we can talk about the characterization of the efforts in these countries by the media.
Yeah, and if our listeners have the chance, they should try and look up information about Kerala and Vietnam.
Yep, very
good. To see how different the responses have been in different countries.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much, Tony. We'll speak with you again next week.
Yeah, thanks a million, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.